Radio Drome. It's episode 87 of Radio Drome. See, Brad, unlike last week, I checked before we started recording this week.
Yeah, but you would have lied and I still wouldn't know what the number was.
Episode 147 and a half.
I'd have been like, yeah, all right. Makes sense, I guess. Jared and I had like half episodes.
You guys got really far while I was gone.
You weren't here for the 40 episodes we recorded in those 2 weeks?
We basically talked for like 20 hours and we're just like, oh, let's just divide this up into like 20 episodes.
Nope, I was watching Black Clover 3 at Ed's place.
Oh, with Fred Williamson?
Heck yeah.
Yeah, I've got that on VHS.
Ed sent me a VHS earlier for Black Ninja, starring Richard Harrison. The blackest ninja.
I've got a movie called Black Ninja. It's on my Soul Brothers of Kung Fu DVD set. It's got Black Ninja, it's got the Badass Mothers set, and it's got Soul Brothers of Kung Fu, Black Ninja, and G.I. Bro.
Oh, G.I. Bro is just the original Inglourious Basterds.
It does have edits to it, though. They kind of edited it a little bit to make Fred Williamson seem more like a main character.
Oh, really? That's kind of funny.
Yeah, so it actually is a re-edited. It's not just Inglourious Basterds. It's Inglourious Basterds if it were kind of a blaxploitation movie.
Was it any good?
I haven't seen the G.I. Bro version yet.
Me neither. I've only seen the Inglourious Basterds one.
Me too, and I've only read about the G.I. Bro cut, so I assume since it says G.I. Bro, it's not just Inglourious Basterds all over again. I'm looking forward to Soul Brothers of Kung Fu. I think that sounds interesting, actually.
Oh, yeah.
But we're not actually here to talk blaxploitation. With Tony Scott's suicide and now the information coming out that the brain tumor reason that we'd been hearing is now inaccurate, we're going to look back at the career of Tony Scott, a director who, I don't like all his movies, but damn, when I like one of his movies, I really like one of his movies.
Yeah, and what? We were talking about, we recorded the episode last week when we were talking about Beverly Hills Cop 2.
The day before the suicide.
We got to remember to stop talking about people we like.
Yeah, they end up dying right away. What happened was on Sunday when Tony Scott committed suicide, I was down editing the Radiodrome that Brad and I had just recorded the night previous. I missed his phone call by like 40 minutes. He leaves me this message. Dude, Tony Scott just committed suicide. Call me back. We sat and talked for like an hour after that about Tony Scott. And it's like, man, we got to make a drome out of this.
Yeah, exactly. That I was just sitting there like, God, thank God I'm already at the bar. I'm a really big Tony Scott fan, honestly, since I was a kid.
I haven't liked a lot of his, and I know this is going to come across not weird at all for me, his 2000s and up stuff. But I loved his 80s and 90s stuff. Well, I think I'd like Man on Fire, but I have not seen that one yet.
Man on Fire was really good. That was really good. I dug that one.
Well, we're going to go chronologically, so we'll get into that. But first, let me ask Brian, how do you feel about Tony Scott's complete body of work?
A fantastic director. I mean, like you kind of said, like even his movies that I'm not a huge fan of, I can at least appreciate what he did. And the ones that I do love of his are just phenomenal movies.
And then I had somebody who was not a Tony Scott fan, say that he was just Michael Bay light.
No. Here's what I would say. Michael Bay Tony Scott perfected what Michael Bay has been trying to do his career. And even when Tony Scott got into the 2000s, visually his style kind of changed a little bit, almost like his style became kind of what Bay's was, but Tony Scott even perfected that in movies like Man on Fire. A lot of rapid cuts, a lot of quick edits, but still wanting up Michael Bay on it. I thought doing it completely better than Michael Bay has ever done. Nobody shot their movie during the magic hour like Tony Scott did. Michael Bay's been trying his entire career, but he's never gonna fucking be Tony Scott.
There's one thing that we can't deny with Tony Scott as a filmmaker. he has always lived in his brother's shadow because everybody knows the name Ridley Scott. You go to your average just Joe on the street and you say Tony Scott, they're like, is that the guy that did Alien?
I never met anybody like that. I've never met anybody who can be really like, I don't even know if I knew they were brothers until the 90s, until like maybe the early or mid 90s. Their style, their tone, their movies are completely different from each other.
Oh, I agree with that. I'm just saying he's always kind of, he's never been as popular as his brother. He's never gotten the big movies that his brother got. He got big movies, but his brother got the big movies. And it always seemed like Ridley was one step ahead of him career-wise.
Maybe certainly in critical acclaim, but, I mean, to be as much as I like Ridley Scott, I usually look more for the Tony movies.
I'm going to say I have not seen his first three things. He did a short film called One of the Missing in 1969. I haven't seen that. Have either of you?
No, it being that early on, I'd almost say that maybe like a film school project.
And then he did Loving Memory in 1971 as Anthony Scott. I haven't seen that either. That was a full release.
Yeah, I haven't even heard of that one.
He did an episode of a French TV series in 1976. I haven't seen that, and I'm going to guess neither of you have.
Oh, come on, man. The Novellas de Henry James? Come on, dude.
Yeah, you're not into those? What the hell, Josh? Come on.
Sorry. It's my racism against the French. The film that really put him on the map is a film that I'm going to both praise and shit on at the same time. And I think Brad and Brian, I think you'll both agree with my reasoning for this. 1983's The Hunger. It's one of the most visually beautiful films you'll ever see. But there is absolutely no story or characters in this movie.
Here's why I think that works. The Hunger, that's what it's about. It is about style. It's about style. It's about eroticism. It's about sex. It's about looking good, talking good, doing some pretty kinky things. And it does that incredibly well.
You have to kind of side with Brad on that. I mean, I do definitely understand what you mean. I mean, it's...
Yeah, the script could not have been more than 18 pages long. I'm sure the script just said, for the next 4 minutes, have really pretty visuals.
But, I mean, he did a great job of capturing that. I mean, even when there's nothing happening, you still can't take your eyes off of it. So I think to a certain regard, I mean, that does stand a testament to him.
I think it does. I think that's purely the intent of the movie. I don't think that that's an accident. I don't think that that's a mistake. I think it's a movie that stylistically very much succeeds at sexualizing the vampire like that, in whereas the Twilight movies failed at that.
I also think it the style hit right when MTV hit. It has a very early MTV style to it, even going so far as the whole Bauhaus band doing the Bela Lugosi's Dead music video.
Mm-hmm.
And it fits. It seems like it fits into the movie.
And I like that. I like that a lot.
And Brad, when you and I were talking on the phone, you said you've never seen this widescreen. If you think it's beautiful full frame, find a widescreen print. You'll be floored.
I'm surprised I don't have it. I just still have my VHS copy.
I don't remember if the DVD is widescreen, although I'd be surprised if it's not. But I've got it on Laserdisc widescreen, and it's just gorgeous. And then he, for whatever reason, he didn't do anything for 3 years. And then he did what's probably his most famous movie, and that would be Top Gun.
Mm-hmm.
A movie I didn't really get to remember. I was 11 years old when I saw this, when I saw it in the theater. I didn't like the movie then. I don't really like it now. I think that is another movie that's more about style over substance. But unlike The Hunger, the style doesn't offset the lack of substance to me. Does that make sense?
The Iceman come. Oh, wait, that's not it.
Wrong Iceman. and personally, I don't see all this gay subtext that, like, Quentin Tarantino did that whole essay on how it's the most homoerotic movie ever made, and it's... Really? I don't see it.
Dude, beach volleyball. Just gonna throw that out.
Hanging out with the boys, beach volleyball. I don't think it's the most homoerotic film ever made. Cruise has much better chemistry with Goose than he does with Kelly McGillis in that movie.
He has much better chemistry with Kilmer.
I think, yeah, that too. Could be my wingman anytime. Like, I think the movie's fun. I think it's a fun flick. With the homoerotic stuff, whatever, okay. Like, when you kind of watch it and you're thinking about that, it's like, you know, that kind of makes me even more fun. But, you know, the most homoerotic movie ever made, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. Guy's Gone Wild, totally. But it's an 80s action movie, and you know, this was a time where, you know, there was certainly a lot of homoeroticism in movies back then. That's why the 80s were pretty awesome.
And the only thing I really disagree with the fallout of what happened after Top Gun was the fact that I'm not a militaristic person, and this movie made the military look so fun and awesome. I think they said it was almost a 700% increase in submissions to the Naval Academy within the year after Top Gun came out. So Top Gun was kind of a recruitment film.
Well, you know, I still thought it was a good movie.
I'm just saying that aspect I disagreed with, but I didn't like that movie first run. I didn't like it when I saw it on video. That's not one I'm disliking because, you know, it's cool to dislike the popular one. I've never liked Top Gun. That one's never done anything for me.
I know plenty of people who don't like Top Gun. And like what you just said, it isn't because they're like trying to be cool or anything like that. They just simply don't like the movie. And you know, I get it. I do. If you don't think it's a fun flick, then you just don't. But I do. I think it's a fun action movie. It's not one of my favorites of the 80s. I probably don't love it as much as some other people do. Probably not one of my favorite Tony Scott movies, but I enjoy it. I've seen it a few times. I get some enjoyment out of it.
Well, I kind of like that. I mean, it's definitely sort of one of those very pro-America Cold War movies, but it doesn't like it's well, there's still, like, consequences to actions in the movie. I mean, it does it in a very lighthearted, fun way. Like, mm-hmm. it manages to be an 80s Cold War action movie, but doesn't, it never really gets, like, that grim aspect that a lot of them did. So, I mean, it still makes, like, a light movie. Like, you can watch it really any time. Like, you don't have to especially be in any particular mood to watch Top Gun. If it's on, like Brad, like it's far and away not my favorite, you know, 80s flick or even Tony Scott flick, but I mean, it's fun. If it's on, I'll watch it until like a commercial break comes on, and then I'll go back to whatever I was doing. I mean, it's a fun movie.
And Brad, like you said about Tony Scott and the Magic Hour, that whole movie was shot at the Magic Hour.
Yeah, and it looks gorgeous.
It does, as does his next film, the 1987 Beverly Hills Cop 2, which you and I talked about. Yeah, and you and I talked about that last week, but man, I love that one. That was actually, if I'm going to give Beverly Hills Cop a 10 out of 10, 2 is a 9 out of 10. It's just a little bit not as good. That's all.
I totally love 2. I love everything about 2.
I think it's not better than the first one, but it's a damn good follow-up.
It's a beautiful looking movie. The music they got on the soundtrack, the original score to the movie, and honestly, really how gritty some of it is too. Just point blank, people just being just shot, you know, whether it's in the head or you know jogging on the street.
And it's also full of backlit fans.
Yeah, I love that. It's kind of a seedy looking movie, and I really dig that about the flick. And it's funny. It's really funny when Eddie Murphy goes in there with the bag and he's pretending that it's a bomb, and the with Taggart, and they're saying that he's former President Gerald Ford, you know. And,
Brad,
also, yeah.
How the f*** do you steal a house?
And also just the crime aspect of it, I thought was really cool and dark. The whole alphabet crimes thing, I dug that.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, like, of the Beverly Hills Cop movies, like, honestly, 2 probably is my favorite. I mean, it's the first one I saw. I mean, it just, I really like it. Like Brad was saying, like, the alphabet crimes thing was really cool. Jürgen Prochnow and cold as ice Brigitte Nielsen in that. Like, I just, I loved it.
Damn, that's a big bitch.
How high up do those legs go?
She was great in that movie.
That's because she didn't really have to emote or act, really.
But she was still good. Good is good, and she was good in that movie.
And no, actually, there's one scene that is not Eddie Murphy that steals that movie for me, and that's Gilbert Gottfried. They're just talking to him, and they tell him about the parking tickets. He picks up the phone and goes, "Bitch!" and hangs it up again. I just love that. So funny. And you can almost see by their reactions, that was not planned. That was probably an ad-lib.
That they didn't expect him to do that.
Yeah, that was most likely an ad-lib, because you can almost see Eddie Murphy start to laugh.
And Judge Reinhold with his trunk of weapons at the end.
And the Cobra poster on his bedroom wall.
Yeah, yeah. Billy, seriously, we gotta talk.
And then after that, I have not seen his next movie, which he took another 3-year gap to 1990, called Revenge.
I saw it in 1990 when it hit video. Yeah, it's the Kevin Costner flick with Madeline Stowe.
No, I've heard the title before, but I honestly couldn't tell you a thing one about it.
Okay, well then let's move on to the 1990 movie, which has been called Top Gun with Cars, and I disagree with that, but Days of Thunder.
I think it is.
It's a little deeper than Top Gun got story-wise or character-wise, I think.
I think half the reason it's called Top Gun with Cars is just because Tom Cruise is back in it.
And it's Tony Scott again.
It's Tony Scott again. It's Tom Cruise. And Tom Cruise is playing a character that's not unlike Maverick in Top Gun.
Days of Thunder got just destroyed by the critics when it came out. And it's one that I don't particularly like it, but that one is much more beautiful to me than Top Gun was. It's a very gorgeous looking movie.
Yeah, I mean, I can say that about any Tony Scott movie, really. Like, and Days of Thunder certainly has that look to it as well. I'm not a Days of Thunder guy because I'm sorry, I just don't like freaking NASCAR. I don't like car racing. I don't like anything that ever revolves around that ever.
It takes more than big shiny objects driving in circles to get you stimulated.
Yeah, it really, really does. Make it Death Race 2000 rules, then I'll watch it.
You just want to see Stallone throwing spaghetti on people.
I do. Put Stallone throwing spaghetti at people in Days of Thunder, I would have liked it. Put Stallone throwing spaghetti and calling someone a baked potato in Talladega Nights. Probably still wouldn't have liked it, but at least it would have had that.
It's one I don't think I've seen that one since I was like 10.
Since 1990, probably, huh?
Yeah, but the biggest thing I remember about it was thinking, crap, I love Mellow Yellow.
All right, then we go on to what I think is, I don't know, this and the next film are going to be dueling it out for my favorite Tony Scott film, but Last Boy Scout. I love this movie. This movie is like Flash Gordon to me, where I own it on VHS, on DVD, on Laserdisc. I'll watch it whenever it's on cable. I saw it in the theater. I've got a poster for it. I've got the soundtrack. I love The Last Boy Scout as a movie.
Friday night's a great night for football.
Hey, life up, bitch.
I love Last Boy Scout. Last Boy Scout is one of Willis's most underrated movies, and I think it's also one of Joe Hallenbeck is one of his most underrated characters. He is funny as hell in this movie. That movie, the action is great. It's bloody, pushes the guy's nose up to his brain. The chemistry between the two is just awesome. It's a solid plot too. Well, I love it. I love how they work in assassination with football, you know, him as the private detective. Damon Wayans is this drug addicted football player. It just works. The movie totally, it's one of, yeah, I agree, it's top three Tony Scott movies.
And it even makes fun of the then still emerging action movie genre. Remember at the end, man, you can't just hit somebody with a surfboard without saying something cool afterwards. And yeah, you know, it's all kind of self-referential right there.
I forgot to tell you, Bob meets fuck you in Polish. Hey, that ain't funny, man. And the villain, Taylor Negron, is Milo.
I wish we'd get a director's cut of that. I'd love to see his full death scene. Because you can tell by how quick they edit away, they shot him going into those helicopter blades.
I'm going to show your daughter what a hot date I am.
Danielle Harris was really good, too.
Why did Mr. Milo cross the road? Because his dick was
stuck in
a
chicken.
Hey, man, will you cut with the wife jokes? ask me how fat she is. F*** you, man. All right, how fat is she?
Wrong place, wrong time. Nothing personal.
That's what you think. Last night I f***ed your wife.
Oh, you did, huh? Well, how'd you know it was my wife?
She said her husband was a big pimp-looking motherfucker with a hat.
Oh, you real cool for a guy about to take a...
I just laughed so hard at that. And you know what? I've never read Shane Black's script for that. The way Bruce Willis delivers some of his lines in that movie, some of those really do come off like ad-libs. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if all of those jokes were in the script or not.
At the same time, Shane Black's really good at that buddy dialogue like that, though.
I actually, one of my favorites in that is just the whole, it's like a real house. I figured it'd be like a cave with skulls and shit on the walls. I think I might have fucked a squirrel to death. And then, you know, you can't look at some of the other players too, like Chelsea Field. She comes off as both evil and oddly sympathetic as the cheating wife.
Yeah, yeah. You kind of get it, you know? The way that Joe Hallenbeck is in that movie, it's like, okay, I putting myself in her shoes, she's not completely evil here.
Yeah, and the movie actually works. We can't avoid pointing out the fact that since Tony Scott committed suicide jumping off a bridge, there's the scene where Jimmy Dix gets thrown off of a bridge.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which, kind of bad taste now, except...
He got thrown off a bridge.
There's two guys, me and Super Dave.
Then passes out.
I'd actually be surprised if anyone really knows who Super Dave is without having to Wikipedia him right now, though. Come on, Super Dave Osborne, 80s that Showtime sense. Series, bizarre. Come on, Brian, you remember Super Dave Osborne, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
So what are your thoughts? Because Brad and I have just been jibber-jabbering. What are your thoughts on Last Boy Scout?
I'm definitely thinking I need to watch it more so I can get in on these quoting matches with you guys.
Well, when you've seen the movie over 100 times, it's not that difficult.
Well, I haven't, so I guess I need to keep going. But no, it's a really fun movie. I love that it's one of those buddy cop movies that the whole time, like when you're watching it, you're not like it doesn't. I guess maybe I don't know. Maybe because, like you said, like it's sort of the emergence of a lot of like this kind of action stuff, like it was. That it doesn't like I wouldn't be sitting there like, oh yeah, buddy cop movie, whatever. You know, it doesn't feel cliched in a way about it.
Yeah, especially since you know they're both like one's a private detective and the other's a former pro football player.
The two characters really don't like one another. Like the scene at the car trunk. You know, is everyone here stupid? Boom! Just you, Flash. Yeah. You know, just, he doesn't bat an eye that he just saw him get punched in the face. Just you, Flash. You know, these two guys don't really like one another, but they're stuck together. Which, you can say a lot of buddy cop comedies do that, but these guys are thrust together through not, oh, the captain's making us work together. They don't really have a choice.
There's also, like, kind of a mutual respect between the two as well, especially given, like, you know, him finding out that the Bruce Willis character was once a fan of the Damon Wayans character. You know, you had a lot of stuff like that going throughout the movie.
And then you even had, like you brought up, the brutal violence. The scene where Halle Berry gets gunned down.
Oh my God.
The guy that's pinned between the two cars, and Hellenbeck just comes up and shoots him in the head, and he doesn't even stop. He just keeps walking like, you know, it's like he was swatting a fly off of his shoulder. Boom, I just killed a guy. All right, who's next? And it's like, there's just some, or the scene where he gets shot in the hand, where Jimmy Dix gets shot in the hand.
Yeah.
Not only did that come out of nowhere, but then I'm like, damn, that was brutal.
Or the, those new plastic keys, the kind that shred. engulfs that guy in flames.
Even when Rick Dukeman outside the pool gets killed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it comes out of nowhere. And then, mm-hmm. like you brought up, Milo's death is probably one of the literally bloodiest up to that point.
Torn apart by a helicopter blade.
What is
and that's after being shot like 100 times.
What is he doing up there? Looks like he's dancing.
Dance the jig. Dance the jig, I swear to Christ.
So Last Boy Scout might be my favorite. Otherwise, it would have to go to 1993's True Romance.
True Romance is a masterpiece.
This is one where I prefer the theatrical cut. All the director's cut adds is violence, and it didn't really need it. It kind of throws the pacing of the film off a little bit.
Not in some instances. In some instances, I thought that worked a lot better in the director's cut. The scene where Patricia Arquette kills James Gandolfini and just after being thrown around and beaten.
You want to talk brutal? That whole scene where he's beating the crap out of her? It's realistic looking.
And I like it better in the director's cut that when she gets him, she shoots him about 10 times with a shotgun and then starts beating him with it. Which that character would have done in that situation.
And that's after he's got a corkscrew through his foot and been hit in the face with the back of a toilet.
So there were some touches in the director's cut that I really liked. Between the two, I've seen the director's cut far more than I've seen the theatrical.
Now, I'm not sure, I have not read Tarantino's script for this, but I did see him bitching that he was not happy with, I think the way, and I'm almost quoting here, I'd have to dig out like an old film thread or something to get the exact quote.
Yeah.
How Tony Scott messed it up.
Well, I think Tarantino's biggest complaint, because Tarantino, I've seen Tarantino talk about the movie, and he likes it fine.
This is right after it came out, so I'm sure time has maybe softened him up on the movie some.
The biggest difference is the ending, because originally Clarence died.
And I really don't like the original implication of the ending that the baby was Drexel's and not Clarence's. I really wanted at least some good to have come out of their relationship and Drexel win.
I never thought about that.
It's on the commentary. He mentions because when you see the little kid, he's got the cornrows and everything just like Drexel, and they were making the implication that the kid might have been Drexel's and she was already pregnant before she met Clarence.
Oh, I never...
I never
thought about that.
I didn't notice it either till it was pointed out, and then I went, no, I don't like that. I don't like that. Yeah. I wanted the kid to be Clarence's.
Yeah, absolutely. That's not exactly Drexel's, like, original, like, hairstyle, so why the kid would be born with that is
Well, the
odd.
Kid was, what, 2-3 years old. It would have just been some stylistic thing that, you know, Patricia Arquette would have done. But you want to talk brutal? The fight between Clarence and Drexel is one of the most brutal hand-to-hand combat fights I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
The way the music and the lighting and, my God, when he shoots Drexel in the cock.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and then, look at me! Look at me! And then he just shoots him, like, multiple times in the face. Just, I mean, the guy's clearly dead and he's still shooting.
I love everything about that movie. I love it that it's a movie about, you know, this movie geek, this comic book geek who works in a comic book shop. You know, he ends up with this call girl and they, you know, get caught up in like a drug operation in Hollywood and stuff. Clarence is just one of the most relatable fucking characters that I've seen in a movie.
And then you have the guest cast. Basically,
yeah.
Anybody who was a name in Hollywood. Has a cameo. Brad Pitt is so funny. Condescend to me, man. I'll fucking kill you. You know, he's all wasted talking to James Gandolfini and that like this. It's like, that was just, I love that.
I love how you get a clearer view of Val Kilmer in the trailer than you do in the actual movie.
And then you tell me if the scene between Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken is not poetry on film.
One of the greatest scenes of all time.
I haven't killed anyone since 1984. Brian, True Romance, what are your thoughts? Since you need to jump in on this shit, man.
Never seen it.
Actually, yeah, kind of like how we were talking there a few weeks ago about ones that's surprising that you've never seen yet. This one, I don't know why. I've just never gotten around to watching True Romance.
You need to, because...
Wait, really?
Yeah, seriously. Like, I've had it, like, on my hard drive here for,
I was
like...
kidding when I said that.
Yeah, no, no, I've had it on
you
my
were
hard
prophetic,
drive for, like,
Brad.
Years. I've just never gotten around to watching it.
Okay, first of all, Tony Scott's direction is great. You've got a cast. You cannot. Okay, you've got Dennis Hopper, Christopher Walken, Christian Slater, Patricia Arquette, Michael Rapaport, Tom Sizemore, Brad Pitt, Val Kilmer, Samuel L. Jackson, Gary Oldman. I've got to be missing at least a half dozen awesome guest appearances in this, aren't
I? Did you mention Gandolfini?
James Gandolfini, Bronston Pinchon.
Bronson, yeah. Saul Rubinek is the sleazy Hollywood producer.
Chris Penn. It's just one of those that everybody who is in Hollywood has a part in this movie.
Oh.
And written by Tarantino.
Ator from Troll 3, Ator.
Yes, yeah, he's that bodyguard. I hate cops.
I hate cops!
And then after he's all shot, the cops... Give me medical attention! I need a hospital! Chris Penn just plugs him twice in the head. Yeah, it's an awesome movie that you just need to see. If nothing else, YouTube the scene with Drexel. I know that's on YouTube. And I guess technically Richard Pryor's in this because they're watching a Richard Pryor movie on TV.
Yeah.
So technically Richard Pryor has a cameo.
They're watching the Mac. You could say the same thing about Sonny Chiba.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because the kung fu flick he goes to at the beginning. Is a Sonny Chiba movie.
He's going to a street fighter marathon. The Street Fighter, Return of Street Fighter, and Sister Street Fighter.
Right. So, you know, it's like we talked about during the Oliver Stone retro, where I think Stone improved on Tarantino's script. I really don't know if Tony Scott made Tarantino's script better or worse, but you can see all these Tarantino touches in this. And I'm not bashing Tarantino tonight because I think. I'm going to assume what's on the screen is more or less Tarantino's script. It was a good script.
Way more than Natural Born Killers.
Yeah. Then we move on. He took another 2-year break, and then he made Crimson Tide.
I like Crimson Tide.
I don't know. It was just that one to me was eh. So I'll let you and Brian hash this one out.
Crimson Tide I thought was a suspenseful movie. That was even had some ghostwriting in it by Tarantino.
Oh, Tarantino. I did not know that.
Yeah, Tarantino did a couple of touch-ups on it. He wrote the scene there at the end where Hackman and Denzel are just kind of waiting there at the end, and then Gene Hackman talks about how much he likes horses. Like this, like real, like kind of human moment in the movie between the two characters who have been at odds with each other through the movie. But then they kind of have, you know, just this like kind of sort of bonding at the end about horses. It was a really, really cool scene. I like the movie. I thought it was very entertaining.
Hell, it's been forever since I've seen this one, but I mean, I don't remember hating it.
The next movie, The Fan, I hated that film. I couldn't stand that movie. If I never see that movie again, it'll be too soon.
Yeah, The Fan is that's I don't think I hate it. I don't hate it because it's not very good. It's essentially a theatrical made-for-TV movie. It's a standard stalker flick, and not nearly as good as Cape Fear, because you got De Niro as another stalker in this movie.
And he even plays a lot of the same mannerisms. He's basically playing the same character.
Yeah. And so, like, De Niro and Snipes both certainly elevated pretty bad material. It's not a very good movie. I'm gonna say it's boring because, I mean, De Niro's having some fun in it. Snipes is pretty good. It is what it is. It is a standard soccer film to the nth degree.
I think probably the two biggest things that I'd say were really things that I remember to this day about it were... One, just like the cool scene with De Niro when he just literally like slams that knife right through the roof of Wesley Snipes' car, or I think through the hood, but that and just the ridiculous VHS boxes for that.
Oh, that was so stupid.
The two-sided ones?
Yeah.
I remember that.
One side, it was De Niro with binoculars, and you see Snipes' reflection. The other side is Snipes in sunglasses, and you see De Niro's reflection with the binoculars. Because of that box cover, they didn't need to put a synopsis on the box.
Oh, yeah, there's not a thing describing that movie on the box. It's just one side De Niro and two smaller Snipes. The other side Snipes and two small De Niros. The sides, the fan. The top, the fan. The bottom, hey, it's a VHS. Nothing tells you anything about it.
But you can look at that and you still know exactly what it's about because the name of the movie is The Fan.
Did the DVD do that with the dual cover or not?
I don't think so. I don't know that I've actually ever seen a DVD for this on a shelf. I mean, I'm sure there is one, but I've never seen it. Like,
yeah, same here. I don't know. That I couldn't tell you.
All right, then let's move on to... I'm 50-50 on this next movie. I liked parts of it. I hated parts of it, and that is 1998's Enemy of the State.
I liked it.
It did some cool things, but that one was way too much one of those like late 90s movies where people just assumed that computers can do everything. Like, it kind of had like the same problem for me that like stuff like The Net did, where it was just...
That's an upcoming topic. We're going to talk about movie trends and... The late 90s computer era is one of our upcoming topics, so...
Yeah, because, I mean, this movie, I would... More than I'd call it a suspense thriller or anything like that, I would... Like, this is one that I firmly label as science fiction.
I haven't seen the Shia LaBeouf Eagle Eye, but the trailers made it look like it was basically a remake of Enemy of the State.
Yeah, that's what I thought of that one whenever I first saw the trailers for Eagle Eye. I was like, oh, I've already seen this.
Yeah, it was called Enemy of the State. It's not going to have Jason Lee get run over on a bicycle. I thought, but you know, with all that stuff, though, it worked in context of that movie, you know? Because in the
so
movie,
did The Net with Sandra Bullock. That worked in context of the stupid movie.
And that's the point. The point is that it's supposed to work in context. If it didn't work in context of that, then it would have failed. And this one did work, so that didn't bother me, really. Kind of a branch off from like Gene Hackman's character. I mean, he's not literally playing the same character, but like kind of a branch off from that character that he played in The Conversation.
I never looked at it like that.
Oh yeah, the two characters are extremely similar to each other.
Well, then next we go to his next thing was a George Michael music video.
Sweet.
I haven't seen a George Michael video since late 80s, early 90s. So I have to say I have never seen the George Michael video for One More Try. I don't know if it feels like Scott or...
They put George Michael in Last Boy Scout, where a strip club where it's playing I Want Your Sex.
So, well, I'm just saying I don't know if it feels like Tony Scott at all or not.
Probably. I don't know.
And then we go to, and Yui had even forgot about this until we were talking on the phone. In 97, they made a TV series out of The Hunger. Which Tony and Ridley Scott both executive produced. Well, Tony Scott directed two episodes of it, including the pilot episode, The Swords. And you can tell that he's used to working with a lot more money.
Did it have much to do with the movie?
Not really. Season one was hosted by Terrence Stamp. Season two was hosted by David Bowie, who was not playing the same character he was in The Hunger.
So it's an anthology?
It's a kind of a crime suspense anthology, a lot more in line with The Hitchhiker, where always had one scene of nudity and usually a twist ending. It was very much like Showtime trying to do The Hitchhiker from HBO.
Okay, all right.
And it was just, you know, there was nothing special there.
Yeah, I remember watching that one, and honestly, like, I think I saw more of season two than season one.
Do you remember David Bowie?
Yeah, like that's like the biggest thing I remember from it. I always remember like liking Bowie, like his like little like intro segments at the beginning, it's David Bowie. I mean, the guy, no matter what, till the day he's gone, he is just a cool, cool guy.
I'm always going to see him as the time traveling FBI agent from Twin Peaks: Fire Walk With Me. That's always what I'm going to see. I'm not going to see him as the man that fell to Earth. I'm not going to see him as Ziggy Stardust. He's the time-traveling FBI agent from Twin Peaks.
I'm always going to see him as that Bing Crosby Christmas special.
I'm always going to see him being interviewed by Max Headroom.
Yeah.
So, The Hunger TV series. Now we're getting into where I've only seen one of the movies we're about to bring up. 2001 Spy Game? Anybody? I haven't seen this one.
Was that the one with, who was it? Robert Redford?
The one that wasn't The Recruit.
Yeah, I haven't seen this, so I'm out on this one.
I'm out on that, too.
Yeah, I remember it coming out. That's the most I can tell you about it.
All right.
Robert Redford's in it.
And then he did a short film called Beat the Devil, which I haven't seen.
No, me neither. I hadn't heard of that one until I looked at his filmography.
Then he did Man on Fire, which, Brad, you and I have talked about this one, that my wife has this on DVD, and I should probably get around to watching the remake of Man on Fire from 2004.
Yeah, I think you might like it. I really enjoyed the hell out of this. It was a brutal, brutal, hardcore revenge movie. Like, more brutal than I had seen in a while at that point in 2004. Man, the stuff that Denzel does in this, like interrogating a guy after he shoved C4 up his ass, questioning a guy with the guy's hands duct taped to a steering wheel, and if he doesn't get the answer he likes, he cuts off a finger and seals the wound with a car cigarette lighter, and the whole scene is playing like a Spanish version of Mickey, You're So Fine. Like, it was a rough flick. It was a take no prisoners, freaking beat the information out of you revenge movie, and I dug it. It's a little slow. It has a big build up to it, but when it gets going, it gets pretty brutal. It was kind of the start there of the style that Tony Scott pretty much continued doing with his movies, which was very, very quick cuts, a lot of handheld work, a lot of different stylistic choices, like different things that they do with subtitles in the movie.
You and I are going to talk about that when we get to the 2005 in this.
Yeah. It was definitely like that, but I thought that it really, really worked. I thought that he did it better than Michael Bay has ever done. Because with all that going on in Man on Fire, I could still tell what was going on.
Yeah, that's one I haven't seen I've only seen probably like the second half of this one, because it was one that just like from the trailers never really caught my eye. I'm like, oh, okay, it's a guy, you know, protecting this family, going after this little girl. Okay, so it just never really caught my eye, especially because I'm like, oh, Denzel, I don't really think of him as an action guy. Okay, whatever. But yeah, then I saw it, or at least the second half. Like, I kind of came into it, and he's like yelling at this woman in Spanish, and then just beating this dude senseless in front of her. I'm like, what the hell am I watching?
It's like, great, right?
yeah, it was. Yeah, I wasn't expecting, like you said, like that level of intensity out of this. Like, I just figured it was just going to be like another kind of just like stereotypical sort of, you know, like. Like, oh, it's an action movie. What you'd consider to be like a, you know, early 2000s revenge movie, which was pretty tame. But then you just have, like, say, just Denzel just going around just mercilessly beating people and just doing all kinds of things that you would never expect.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just, it's definitely worth watching.
It earned that hard R.
All right. Then next, he did another short film called Agent Orange. Again, I haven't seen it. I've never seen any of the Tony Scott short films. Then he did Domino, which is probably my most hated film amongst his entire filmography. It's even above The Fan. I can't tell you if I thought it would have been a good movie. It's edited like a blind person on an ADD while having a seizure edited this movie. I don't think four frames go by without an edit to a different camera angle or a different shot. I got motion sick trying to watch Domino.
I could tell what was going on. I enjoyed it. I thought it was underrated. I didn't think it was one of his best. I like it a hell of a lot better than The Fan. I thought the characters were really good. I thought Keira Knightley did a good job. I loved Mickey Rourke in it. I enjoyed it.
And I do also have to say, for the sake of full disclosure, the real Domino sued them to make them stop trying to call it a true story, because she said only approximately 10% of what wound up on the screen was part of her real life. The rest of it was all Hollywood invention, yet all the posters and the trailers were the true story of Domino Harvey. And she's like, no, you don't get to do this.
Yeah, that doesn't make it a bad movie.
I'm just saying we need to point out that it's billed as a true story, and it's not even close to that.
Yeah, but yeah, so are most movies billed as a true story.
Yeah, this is one, again, like I just never got around to watching. This one, again, the trailers never grabbed me, and I don't know, I'm not the biggest fan of Keira Knightley. Honestly, until like right now, I didn't even know that Mickey Rourke was in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's certainly one that I went to go see just because Tony Scott directed it. And yeah, I can't say I'm a huge Keira Knightley fan either, but I thought she was good in this.
2006's Deja Vu, which I've never even heard of.
That's another Denzel one. It was...
Oh, okay, now that you said Denzel, okay, I think I remember seeing the trailer for this one then.
This one's I remember the trailers kind of selling it like it was like a time travel sort of like Final Destination type thing. Like he'd see stuff happen and then be able to go back and change it or something.
No, that's next.
Oh, my bad. I get Denzel and Nick Cage confused a lot.
Are you telling me they're not the same guy? I think Denzel Washington is Nicolas Cage with a really good suntan.
Well, that's the show, folks. Good night.
They are both awesome.
All right, and then after that, he did an episode of the TV series Numbers, which I stopped watching long before the Tony Scott episode came about, so I have not seen that. Either of you guys big Numbers fans?
I saw a couple episodes of Numbers. Not my thing. Not into that procedural type show anymore. Not my thing.
I think I've seen like 5 minutes like flipping through channels, and it was insufferable the entire time I was watching that show. So yeah, I can't say that I've seen, I don't know, maybe it was that episode. I'm just saying I didn't like it. So
he also did the remake of The Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3 and then Unstoppable, neither of which I've seen. So I'm going to sit out these two.
Unstoppable, I thought was really good. And if this is Tony Scott's last movie, he made a fun one. It was a pretty like simplistic movie, a kind of sort of disaster type movie we'd see in the 70s.
Isn't that Denzel again too?
Yeah, it is. With this Unstoppable train, it was very, very entertaining. But yeah, Brian saw Taking a Pelham 1, 2, 3, and I remember saying it was bad.
Oh, it is terrible. It does. It's basically like it's filmed like it's an episode of CSI. It's erratic. It shows things like they'll explain what they're about to do, and then it'll show you what they're doing, and then it'll cut back to them explaining what they're going to do. I mean, it's insufferable. Like they'll explain that they're going to move, like, detour some things from one side of Manhattan to the other, and then it'll show you like a Google Earth image of like the route they're taking and stuff like that, and a couple quick cuts of trucks moving.
What you're saying is it's an action movie for dummies.
Yeah, it's by the numbers. Although, what's the worst part about it is a terrible remake of The Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3.
Oh, the original's awesome.
That's one of my favorite Walter Matthau movies, and this does absolutely no justice to that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then it's a good thing that Tony Scott goes out on Unstoppable rather than Pelham 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. Pelham, I would say, is probably... In my opinion, of ones that I've seen of his, Travolta's second worst movie next to Battlefield Earth. And he gives it a run for it.
What I want to say is Tony Scott was a great director who was often overshadowed by his equally talented brother. But I think it's a shame that he's gone, that we're not going to get any more Tony Scott movies. And what I want everyone to do after listening to this is to go grab Last Boy Scout or True Romance or Beverly Hills Cop 2 or The Hunger or something, pop it in, watch a Tony Scott movie.
Have a marathon, and you pick the best ones too. True Romance, Last Boy Scout, Beverly Hills Cop 2. That's my top three right there of Tony Scott. Ever since I was a kid, was a huge fan. Always looked forward to his movies, and it's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, even for me, that the idea of just going ahead and having a marathon right now sounds actually like a really good idea. Cause I mean, even for someone like me who I've seen a majority of his movies, but even at that, still like one that's, in contention for his best one, True Romance, I've yet to see. So, I mean, even for me, I mean, there's still something new here to see. And
if it's on your hard drive,
one more thing to really like about him.
If it's on your hard drive next week, we're going to ask you how it was. Cause you're going to watch it this week.
Damn right.
Just gonna put me on the spot like that? No, actually,
yes, I am.
I'm off on Sunday, so that's probably what I'm gonna. If I don't have a chance to hear tonight, I'll probably be doing that Sunday.
Tony Scott, you made a lot of great movies, and your voyage to the beyond, best of luck. Night, guys.
Bela Lugosi is dead.